I feel the need for those labels because then I can assert that I actually exist. And also, if I don't have a label, somebody else would come and give me a label.
Welcome to the Sensuality Academy podcast, where I share tangible techniques to help you embody your femininity, enhance your sex life, and elevate your relationships. I'm your host, Eleanor Hadley, sensuality coach and founder of Sensual Yoga. Now, let's unleash your inner sensualista. Welcome to episode 50 of the Sensuality Academy podcast. So over my 50 episodes, one of my most popular ones has been episode number 24 on bisexuality and sexual fluidity. The amount of DMs that I received and continue to receive about that episode absolutely warms my heart. And it seems as though the topic of bisexuality is one that resonates deeply for many of you. And so I'm very excited to share this episode today with you, where we're revisiting the topic with my wonderful guest, Anna Kochakova. Anna is a Russian-born Australian author, poetess, and a passionate bi-plus activist based in Sydney. Anna is the creator of the Bi and Prejudiced Instagram space, which helps celebrate multisexual attraction, human diversity, and mental health. Anna's book of the same name, Bi and Prejudice, is due for release on October 4th. And I was lucky enough to get an advanced copy to read prior to our interview, and it is a really beautiful piece of work. Anna shares candidly about her experience with coming out later in life, which is often the way for many of us, the things that shaped her identity, and the all too familiar questioning that typifies the bisexual experience. In our chat, we spoke about the stereotypes often associated with bisexuality, and the differences between how bi men and women are perceived, internalized biphobia, the endless labels and the importance of them, the unicorn trope, the rise in representation, and so much more. I really hope that you love this episode, and if so, please do go ahead and leave a rating and a review of the podcast in your podcast app. It would mean the absolute world to me. Okay, without further ado, here's Anna.
All right, welcome to the Sensuality Academy podcast, Anna. It's such a pleasure to have you here. I had such a lovely time reading through Bi and Prejudice. There was so much in there that resonated with me, and I know that will resonate deeply with my audience as well. So thank you for coming on and joining us today.
Oh, I'm very excited to be here. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. So something in your book that you talk about is all about stereotypes. And I think that we can't really talk about the topic of bisexuality without addressing the multiple stereotypes that we hear all about and that kind of impact our experience of being bisexual, of coming out as bisexual. And it's something that I think most people who resonate with the term bisexuality or feel that their sexuality is not necessarily straight have come up against. So I wanted to ask you, what do you think has contributed to this messaging and how did it impact you personally as well?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I've been really wondering about why there is so much stigma and misunderstanding around what bisexuality is. Mm-hmm. And instead of allowing space and time to actually discuss it and have conversations and ask more questions, we create sometimes those ideas of what we think it is, and then they just get repeated. And I think that's what happened many times. And somewhere in the past along the way, instead of researching a bit more and maybe asking more questions, I feel that mistakes were made and then they were repeated again and again. And I find that difficult in my experiences. And I found it very difficult at the very beginning, especially because I, first time I even mentioned bisexuality without actually using the word. Initially, I was just describing experiences. And I would straight away have reactions of things like you can't be trusted or tell me more about all the crazy sex stuff that you do, which wasn't even in the conversation. And it's asking me for so much information I don't want to share yet. And there just were so many things that were straight away made me feel like I have to now explain. I have to do so much work now, so much heavy lifting. And this is just sexuality. While it's such an important part of my life, it's just one part. And yet here is so much work. So it was a lot easier sometimes to hide, not talk at all. And this way, we don't get to actually talk about it. And those other misunderstandings and errors, they just continue to repeat again and again.
Absolutely. And I think something that you mentioned in your book was the perception of people who are bisexual as being contagious or weird or unnatural in some way. And I think, of course, a huge contributor to that messaging is the heteronormativity and compulsory heterosexuality that is ingrained into us since we're born, really, that is the norm, that is the default in a way, and anything else outside of the binary, outside of what society deems to be quote unquote normal is weird. And I think that this is something that can have such an impact on everybody, especially those who identify as outside of what is quote unquote normal, feeling like we are weird in some way. And I think that this is why so many people come out at such a later stage in their life, like you and I, because we've had to grapple with it being seen as wrong and us being seen as wrong. How have you sort of reconciled that?
Yes, I think this is very true. And I think, you know, we also come to life and very early on, we already learn that it's not quite safe to talk about your experiences and feelings. You might not have a word bisexual yet, and it might be just a crush on a friend, or it might be some other experience I can be feeling and not even understanding yet. What is this I'm feeling? But I already can see in the movies and through my peers and my community, I just can see already this is not very safe to discuss. Mm-hmm. There's just not enough places to discuss it. And that's why it also made me so difficult for myself. It was such a difficult experience of putting any label. And to be honest, for a very long time, I didn't want any. I wanted to hide. I didn't want any labels. I didn't know there was a label as well. Mm. And I realized that everything was defaulted to only one sexuality. Mm. And then because I think the rainbow community, and especially gays and lesbians that were fighting for their rights for so long, we somehow established now two spaces, yeah, a very binary world with two spaces where you fall into the default of heterosexuality or you are opposite of that. And that's it. And so there were no other choices. Mm-hmm. And that was actually challenging because I didn't feel like I was fitting into any of them. But also I could see how in my place where I was growing up, lesbians and gays, that space was dangerous. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to belong to it. So I didn't want to be accidentally misunderstood by people. Mm-hmm. So that was another space I didn't want to touch because there's not enough safety in the conversations. And so falling into the default of heterosexuality seemed easy, but it is such a big toll on mental health and physical health as a result. So it affected actually all areas of my life.
I think a lot of people presume that the topic of sexuality is almost like a luxury, like an other, and like, oh, you don't need to talk about that. That's not something that's necessary to discuss, right? And this is because, of course, the topic of sex itself is so taboo. And something that you do mention in your book, which I really resonated with, is just because the word bisexual has sexual in it doesn't mean that it's all about your sex life. For me, of course, I'm a sex educator. I teach all about sex. I think it's a really important part of our lives. But the fact that sexuality and your sexual preferences and orientation get so wrapped up in just what do you do in bed with a person, and that's what people are thinking about. You know, I think so often people are getting so exasperated by what they refer to as the gay agenda and like, oh, stop telling us about, you know, your sex life. I'm like, we're not really, we're just saying like we're humans and we can love other people and different genders, and like just let let us do that instead of it being this really, really binary issue. And I love that you brought up the topic of labels, because labels, I think there's a lot of people out there now getting very exasperated by the sheer number of what they perceive to be new labels when it comes to identity. And the question often comes up, like, do we actually need labels? And I mean, I personally feel like this is a very, very nuanced and personal decision whether or not you label yourself. And something that I think was really wonderful that you wrote in your book was that labels, symbols, and identities, they help us to assert our right to exist. And I think that's powerful, to have a group or an identity that you can resonate with and say, yes, this helps me feel a sense of belonging. So I'd love for you to expand a little bit on your idea of labels. Should we be identifying with labels? Does it matter if someone says they're bisexual or not? What's the importance?
That is so interesting. It's such a good question, because heterosexual people have been showing their sexuality from the beginning of times. Mm. They're holding hands, they're kissing, they're making out in nightclubs. They don't need to explain what they're doing. And they are getting married in public. They're doing all those things all the time. And they actually talk about sex a lot. Mm-hmm. And whether that's movies or personal conversations at the pub, but they talk about it. They always express it. But once there's another sexuality that they feel unsure about, I heard that as well. Somebody did tell me, it's great that you found it. Wonderful. Why do you need to talk about mm-hmm. it? Like, who cares? Just be you. And it feels really well-meaning. And be you. Go for it. It's awesome. But just don't tell me about it. I don't really need to know. And exactly because of that, we need to have the labels. And it is interesting, because personally, I would love to have no labels. Mm-hmm. It's just Anna. I just live. This is what I love. This is what I don't love. Mm-hmm. But I feel the need for those labels, because then I can assert that I actually exist. And also, if I don't have a label, somebody else would come and give me a label. And they would usually mislabel me. And it can be actually damaging and hurtful, especially when it comes to sex and when it comes to medical space and mental health. All of those areas suddenly become difficult to either access, or they're difficult to getting the right treatments or support. So for that reason, identifying self is really, really important. And also having expression of self is just wonderful for mental health. Being able to just say, this is who I am, instead of that struggle inside of my head, do I fit into this box? Do I fit into another one? And I was just having a conversation with someone actually who told me that they were doing quizzes on being bisexual enough, and eventually got stressed out. And I was thinking, oh my God, exactly. Institutions and organizations are telling us this is what your sexuality is. And it can be helpful when we really don't know what to do and where to go. But we actually feel it. We actually know quite early. And that's why I think just the lack of those safe places to be able to explore it and hear self is where the trouble starts. So very, very early on, and not having labels so early on, then makes it just more difficult with every new year. So definitely love that there's so many labels. And that's actually another thing with having so many labels, even though I feel like bisexuality really homes many other identities within it, this intricacy and nuances of having pansexuals or omnisexuals or demisexuals or asexuals and all of those, they add detail to people's experiences. And that's why I welcome them. And I think that it's great to add even more detail if that needs to be. But really, we're humans, and they're just all very similar, but also so different. And I really, really love it.
Yeah, I think it's a powerful practice to have different identities and labels available to explore, because, you know, we are fluid in nature. Mm-hmm. I think that a lot of the time, the confusion comes with particularly the view that, oh, well, you just are straight, and like, that's it, and you never question it, right? And it can be so confusing when you begin to question it and you're like, oh gosh, I'm not meant to. But if you have different labels that are available and different communities that are available, you can start to understand. And also, you know, not taking on this role of it has to be rigid, like, oh, I have to decide now that I am bisexual and that's what I am. Because I think that there is so much room, particularly with sexuality, to be fluid and to go, actually, no, maybe this label fits me better, or maybe I want to explore. And I think that sometimes the beauty is in that fluidity and just saying, I want to explore regardless. And I know that a lot of people who have potentially identified as bisexual, as friends in my life, have sort of said, actually, I more identify as fluid now and I don't want to box it in. And I just think that it's really nice to be able to have that freedom to choose, rather than there is a binary and you have to be one or the other, or you can only be one because there is only one option and everything else is, you know, a sin or whatever other kind of conditioning we've received about differences in sexuality.
Absolutely, yeah. And you mentioned how it is having all those identities, so I can look at them, try them on, see whether they fit me today, tomorrow that might change. And that experience is one experience. And then sometimes there's another one when others also look at those labels and say, ooh, to me, you don't seem like you fit into that one. Maybe you should consider that. And that's, again, the problem of trying to fit others into some boxes because we want to feel control, or at least this is how it really feels to me. But I want to let people have the freedom of labeling self and then give enough space for others as well to use those labels how they want to use them, and just to take a step back and have a conversation instead of saying, you're not quite fitting into that, I'm not sure you're bisexual.
Yeah, I think that there's sometimes a bit too much policing when it comes to it. And I know that a lot of people have told me since my previous episode about bisexuality that they didn't know whether or not they were allowed to claim, like you said before, your friend taking these quizzes, am I bisexual enough? You know, can I claim it if I haven't actually been with someone of the same gender? Am I allowed to, if I've only had these experiences as opposed to those experiences? But I think that a really, really great thing to do is to kind of flip it on its head and be like, well, when you were a teenager and you hadn't even had your first kiss, did you believe you were straight? You know what I mean? Because it is this compulsory heterosexuality. Like, yeah, of course, we are just assumed. And there's not often as much confusion around, oh my gosh, if I like the opposite sex or gender, it's just assumed, like, yeah, that's what you will like. And I'm not going to ask you if you've had a first kiss, if you've actually slept with someone, what have you done, how many people, like, does it count? We're not taking score in that way when it comes to straightness. And so why do we need to do that to prove our bisexuality?
Exactly. There's no straight checklist, but that's an interesting idea.
Definitely, we don't need any checklists. Too much pressure.
Oh, absolutely. And you're so right, actually. I hear that so much as well. So often people say, I just don't feel like I quite fit into this. Am I bisexual enough? And I ran a bunch of surveys on Instagram as well with my community, giving them different scenarios and asking them whether they thought those people and those scenarios specifically were bisexual. Mm-hmm. And there's no right or wrong answer, actually. But I found the most suitable one was, I don't know. There's not enough information. It's just one experience. Uh-huh. And it may be bisexual, maybe not. And then somebody also told me, because it's me in all of those scenarios and I'm bisexual, all of those scenarios are going to be bisexual, full stop. And I really loved it. Like, there's different ways of looking at it. And I think just allowing a bit of space and allowing people to have this experience and labeling them is so beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely. At the end of the day, you get to choose however you identify. It's not necessarily up to anybody else to tell you. Even if you're listening to this episode and you're thinking, oh, I don't know if I'm bi, are they telling me that I am? You get to decide. That is entirely your choice. But I wanted to talk about, you know, in your book, you sort of describe the journey towards coming out and the experiences that you had had with women, but not necessarily claiming your bisexuality. And so there's one part where you said, you know, I'm a woman who finds women beautiful. And I was actually having a chat with someone that I'm seeing just over the weekend, and we were connecting over the fact that we'd always just been like, well, duh, doesn't everybody think women are beautiful? And prior to realizing that I was, in fact, bisexual, I was just like, oh, I just thought that this was everybody's experience. That, like, yeah, I date men and I sleep with men. But of course, I find women incredibly attractive. And yes, I have made out with some. And yes, I've had a couple threesomes. And yes, like, of course. But I never allowed myself to question, perhaps is that indicating something about my sexuality? Because I just thought it was the norm. Like, women are beautiful. Is that not just a fact?
Exactly. I agree with you. And I think this is actually perfect. And I think in ideal world, that's exactly how it is. Isn't that just obvious that women are beautiful, or whatever the gender or whatever the sex you find most interesting or most beautiful? And yes, it was such a journey, and as I was saying earlier, I was really trying to hide. There were so many other things that I was paying attention, and so many other things that mattered to me. And I really wanted to hide this little thing, even though I wasn't looking at it as I have this little thing I have to hide. It just was something I wasn't paying attention or looking at, even though my experiences with women always were there. But everyone around me treated me as if this is Anna being maybe a bit drunk, maybe a bit wild, maybe just having a good time. We love watching her doing this. So this is fabulous. Obviously, that's not gay or bi or anything else. It's just Anna doing this thing.
Yeah.
And it was playing into me feeling safe enough staying in that place and never saying, but no, hold on. It actually means something to me. And also because I thought, well, now I think looking back, that those relationships that I was involved with just felt rather toxic and very sudden and very urgent and very in the moment, but not entirely enjoying them, but more performing.
Yeah.
That's why I also didn't dare to say, hold on, maybe that's how I felt. It was more of fulfilling some sort of role that I did not create for myself at all. It was there and I just like slipped myself into it. And that's why it was so confusing. Later on, looking back, it of course made so much more sense. But at the time, I was floating between feeling in those shoes or playing those roles, but also having feelings and not quite understanding what that all means. Am I meant to have feelings? Does it change who I am if I have feelings? And actually, first time I felt really strong about someone, and that's only one of the stories that actually did make it into the book. But the very first time I really felt strongly about someone, I was so scared. I felt that is going to change my identity. Somebody's going to look at me differently. Should I even accept that this happened? And I had a whole conversation in my head because of all those past experiences as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Gosh, it's amazing how much our conditioning comes into play when we're starting to even question and allow ourselves to open up to am I? Maybe I'm not straight. And actually questioning that, so much comes up. And a huge part of my work and my coaching is always questioning your conditioning. And it can be such a confronting process to realize, oh, I have received these messages. And you actually share in your book so many messages that you received growing up about anything queer being wrong, even especially in Russia. It sounded like it was incredibly harsh punishment for being seen to potentially be gay, and to actually say and admit that you're gay was punishable when you were growing up. So I can imagine how that rhetoric would have ingrained in you and sort of pushed down your ability to open up.
Yeah, I love how you mentioned encouraging people to question their conditioning. Instead of asking people to question self, I feel there's a lot, especially put on cis women, to question themselves, because we went through this time of being hysterical, being crazy, being institutionalized, can't even pronounce it, that's such a better word. And all of those experiences were always around question yourself. There must be something wrong with you. Maybe you need to do better, go to self-help, like better yourself, be different, fit in. But instead, questioning conditioning and questioning dominant narrative and questioning stories we're told, and just sitting with the self and feeling what is right. Is those things that were told me are right, or how I feel is right? And just figuring this out, not an overnight thing for sure. But I really love that encouragement. And I think on the pages of this book, there's so many stories that I think are just flashing lights of indoctrination. It's just story after story that shows how I thought and how I felt. And a lot of those stories, when I was writing them, was so cringy, because I looked at them back and thought, oh my God, no way I was thinking this. No way I was doing this. This is just so bizarre. I feel so differently today. Why did this happen? and all those conversations in my head, because those were the stories I was told, and I embodied them. I believed them. I followed them. And growing up in Russia was interesting in a way that I didn't really question very much. Again, survival was a lot more important given my particular upbringing and my peers and the community I was in. And I didn't know many queer people. That's why I had this story of having guests in our summer house, two gay men coming along, and that was a huge secret. I think it probably still is. I haven't really asked my family. It's been such a long time. But this is a little secret to hide, not to hang out with or tell people about, that you know someone.
Yeah.
Even though man in drag is one of the most favorite entertainment types in Russia, or at least in the community where I was, it's just so confusing.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, yeah, you get shown, oh, this is okay for entertainment purposes, but not as a real human being in our community.
Yes.
And I want to talk to you actually a little bit more about representation, because we're currently, you know, in a time where LGBTQIA plus rights and topics are being spoken about so much more than they ever have been up until this point. Trans rights are making headlines, and I feel like there has been a lot of progress. Of course, we have so far to go, but there's been quite a lot of progress. And I think as a result of this, I keep hearing the rhetoric, particularly from, you know, like the boomer generation and people like that, who are potentially a bit more conservative, shall we say, you know, saying like, oh, suddenly everybody's bi, everybody's queer, everybody's non-binary, like, oh, it's just a trend, right? And I think this is a common thing when status quo starts to get questioned. People who are stuck in it and kind of servants to the status quo and like really, really like fighting for the status quo, they get exasperated and they think, oh gosh, it's just a trend. Everyone's just hopping on this trend. But personally, I see it as a direct sort of indication of the impact of representation. And the fact that we're seeing more representation in the media, in television, in music, of queer people being openly queer, people being non-binary, coming out, being openly trans, so many different identities and intersections happening and being celebrated in the media, in society, I think that it's only natural that it allows people to see themselves in an example that they've never, ever seen before. You know, it wasn't until recently, and I can't sort of quote the exact time or movie or whatever it was, but relatively recently that I've started noticing on shows that I'm watching, there's more storylines about queer folk. There's more use of pronouns just in the general rhetoric. And I think that all of these things help us to go, oh, maybe it's safe for me to be who I am. Not, oh, that's what's cool now. Because like we know that it's still, you know, you're on the fringes. You're still you get mistreated, you get a lot of eye rolling, you get all of the discrimination, right? But it seems to me, and I'm obviously coming from a place of privilege being a white woman in the West, but it seems easier, not easy, but easier to accept your identity and to experiment and explore without fearing as much as perhaps in the past.
Yes, I think it gives more opportunities. It's like seeing, it's very hard to believe without seeing for us. That's why it took us a while to figure out that there was viruses or bacteria. We can't see, mm-hmm. can't believe. Even though religions still blossom. So it is interesting that without enough representation, and there's still absolutely right, so much more to go, but without really having an accent on them or having emphasis on their existence, it is unnoticeable and therefore impossible. It just doesn't exist. And I remember I grew up with Sailor Moon, and I always thought that they were all attracted to everyone because of just closeness of their relationships. It's later, like 20 years later, I was reading about people suspecting some of the characters being bisexual. And there were so many more conversations about the characters of that cartoon. But I saw this cartoon when I was 5, when I was 10, when I was 16. I've always had it back in Russia. And I've always looked at those characters. And I thought that this is what people do. They're just very close with each other. And especially because they're warriors and they're women warriors. And it was also so binary because now I'm looking back, I'm thinking, are they all women? So there's not enough main character that represents your experiences. And now I feel there's more of that representation, that main character is there, and it's not specifically a dramatic fallout or a horrible survival or something I've learned from this horrendous experience I had, but it's now a little bit more, as we want to say, normal, really, with quotes, because it's not normal, it's just accessible. Now it's possible and now it's there. They just go about their day and they just do things and they happen to be bisexual because sexuality is just one part amongst many others. They may have superpowers, which is like triple times more exciting than their sexuality. But just adding that and showing them as main characters and doing things that everyone is doing. So now they like exist and I can relate to them. So I'm really excited about that. It's like that documentary on Netflix, I think it was, where we're talking about trans representation in the films.
That is an amazing film.
And they were talking about,
I can't remember the name of it, but I'm going to put it in the show notes because it's wonderful.
It also escaped my mind right now, but it was showing representation of trans women, trans people in the movies back in the day when we thought that didn't exist. But we didn't know it, we didn't see it. It was there sort of, and sometimes you read about movies and animation as well, and there's a history of people trying to put more queer characters into it, and then they get written off or they get a little bit more hidden. So this is something that always existed, but now we have, I think, more of it, and more importantly, it's just amplified because such big names as Netflix pick them up. And I think actually Netflix was one really of organizations that were first even putting movies there, so accessible, available out there.
Yeah, it's so powerful. And I know that for me, just sort of being aware of more queer issues and consuming more mainstream media that is more inclusive, that was a huge help to me realizing and kind of giving myself permission to come out. Do you feel that if there was more representation and open discussion about sexuality for you, that maybe you would have been comfortable coming out earlier in life?
I think it definitely contributed towards more confidence. It still probably would have been rather difficult in the community and in the country where it's almost punishable by law. even though, again, it's hidden, not entirely explained.
Yeah.
So you don't even know whether you're breaking the law. So it was still a little bit difficult, but I feel if there was more representation, maybe that meant that country would have been different. Maybe that would have meant that this is allowed, this is possible, this is accepted. But I think with just more representation, at least I would have felt as if that's possible and I could exist and that I'm not crazy. Feeling like I was crazy was such a common thing, thinking that those feelings that I have need to be fixed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So I want to circle back to stereotypes, because it is, it's just such a huge aspect of being bisexual, having the unicorn stereotypes thrown at us, the over-sexualization as a bisexual woman. There's something that I think a lot of bisexual people are aware of in the hypersexualization of bisexual women and the assumption that any woman who's bisexual is essentially straight, but just is with women sometimes and for the benefit of the male gaze, whereas bisexual men are thought to be essentially gay. And I think that what contributes to this is just the fact that we exist in a patriarchal society that views most everything through the male gaze and being for men, that essentially women exist for the pleasure of men. And so that's where we get the stereotype that, oh, you're bisexual, let's have a threesome. And this is not to say that threesomes aren't great. I love threesomes. I'm doing an entire episode on it soon. But the assumption is that, oh, that's what it's about, not the fact that you could be a bisexual woman who is in a relationship with a woman at this point in time, but it's not always about, oh, this needs to be witnessed, which is something that you spoke about, this in your experiences as well, feeling like, oh, I'll explore my sexuality within my relationship by, I think you said, being the good girlfriend and having a threesome. Your sexuality, your sexual exploration is being witnessed by someone else.
There's a few very interesting things. And one of them is always being defined by your relationship. And that's why so many times bisexual women in relationships with women or in relationship with one woman or several, it doesn't really matter, but it's straight away, okay, same sex, so you're probably just gay, you're confused. And having a relationship with a man, then of course it's straight away heterosexual. So the default falls on one of the two. There's all the monosexism wins every time. There is no detail. If you're with a straight man, you're straight. If you're with a woman, and by the way, the woman's sexuality doesn't matter, you're still gay. So it always falls on one of the two, which is really bizarre. And that's why I love that phrase. The friend told me, saying that I'm bisexual. So all my relationships are bisexual in my eyes. I thought, yeah, I'm gonna allow say that to myself a lot more. And of course, this whole exploration of self, it's two very different things. It's finding out that you have attraction to same sex and then being in a relationship with someone who says, well, great that you do, let's have a threesome or do something, instead of saying, well, fantastic, what do you want to do? What do you want to know more? How can I help? Do you want to talk about it? Let's celebrate it. All of those things instead of just bombarding with all the misunderstandings straight away. And I agree with you that just a lot of those things, they all come from the patriarchy. It all comes from the space that is held by cis white men who control everything. And this is just another space of control, because we need to control women. So they stay in the place that was created for them. Mm. And, of course, everyone else is suffering because of that. Everyone in the rainbow community and men themselves, and men in power just continue perpetrating that. So it makes sense that it happens, but we embody those stories and we believe them, and then we believe the misunderstanding, and then we continue repeating it, and others believe it, and we don't have a conversation about it. So if somebody was coming out as bisexual, wouldn't it be amazing to ask them, that's wonderful, what does it mean to you? Can you tell me a bit more? Instead of bringing on all those ideas. And I didn't have any of that, of course. I had a very similar experience of my ex also saying, oh, fantastic, I would love to see you with a woman. And I took it as a compliment at the time. I thought, oh, okay, well, yeah, of course, it makes sense. I mean, I want to be with a woman. Last time that was such a long time ago, maybe I need to check, which was another thing that came to my mind. I need to prove it to myself. Mm-hmm. So I thought I'll go and check, but I'm in a relationship and it's a, such a loving option of somebody to say, mm-hmm. no, great, you do it, I'll just watch, without asking what I want, without asking whether that's okay. And it is, it feels, and yet it also feels, okay, well, he sounds supportive, I guess. It's okay. Maybe I should try. And it's just such, it's a breakdown of communication. Mm-hmm. And this first feeling that feels yucky is ignored. And then we just jump into doing some action. Yeah. And that's why I think sex is such a wonderful thing and such a big part of our lives. And we need to talk about it. It's just that it's not necessarily representative of sexuality. And people can be in monogamous relationship yeah. and be bisexual. People can be very sexually active and be bisexual or not. Or people could be asexual and not feel sexual desire. Sex is still an important part for them. They just don't feel the desire, but they feel the attraction, the affection, sensations, and all other beautiful things. So it's interesting that the sex as act and sexuality gets so much intertwined just by default. And I think that has been a problem for very long, because homosexuals had the same problem of, from, as we wanted to call them, more conservative people. I did hear that many times during my degree period, when everyone in that space would say, oh my mm-hmm. God, they're all probably super drunk and having sex with each other nonstop. And I just had the same conversation with someone on the radio last night, where one of the hosts was telling me that, like, yeah, I hear that every time when my degree period, everyone who has those ideas that are not questioned and not explored, they say, oh my God, you're all probably having sore bumps at the moment because it's my degree. That's it. They're just too tied together. There's no nuance. There's no detail. And it is just bigotry.
Well, it just strips people of their humanity. Is like, we can be like, there's a full spectrum of our experience. It's not just about sex. It's also the fact that we are just like real human beings who enjoy love and respect and relationships and communication, all these things that you're not questioning as much in a straight community. Just having those labels sort of thrown at them, I think is very, very detrimental, of course. And at the same time, sex is a really important mm-hmm. thing that we don't need to shy away from and think is gross or bad or wrong. And something else that I wanted to briefly touch on is, so there is definitely this assumption that you know, bisexual people are, you know, hypersexual, and the assumption that they're just attracted to everybody. And I know for me, one thing that was confusing to me was, like, I thought, okay, well, of course I think that women are beautiful, but I'm not attracted to all women, so I can't be bi, right? And then I had to have this conversation with myself where I said, well, you're not attracted to all men, and you thought you've been straight this whole time, right? Like, it's not that black and white. Like, nobody is attracted to every single person of whichever gender they happen to be attracted to. You're attracted to certain people. And I wanted to talk about this idea that we are, I think he said in the book, seen as, you know, promiscuous and slutty, unstable cheaters, people who, you know, are like a flight risk, if you will, just because they happen to be attracted to multiple genders. Which, of course, like, saying it, it sounds so ridiculous, right? But these are the stereotypes that we get thrown at us. But to kind of bring up a different issue, I wanted to talk about the intersection between bisexuality and non-monogamy, because this is something that I know in my experience, and this is very, very different for all different people. Not everybody is going to resonate with non-monogamy. But for me, I've found that exploring in the past few years the world of non-monogamy and realizing that I was bisexual, I had this moment where I was like, oh, this actually works really well, because I can have the stability and comfort of a committed relationship while, or multiple committed relationships, while feeling the freedom to express my sexuality without that assumption that, oh, I've got to choose one way or another. So I'd love your thoughts on this. Do you feel like there is an intersection there? Do you think that that is harmful, or do you think that that is helpful?
That's a very interesting question. I think that, of course, sexuality and then those types of relationships, I don't think they are one dependent on another. I think they're just intertwined. And I feel that a person can be bisexual and monogamous and bisexual and polyamorous or open or have other styles of relationships. And to be honest, I looked into it's a little bit of a history, not of sexuality as such. It's just through reading about movies and books, I came across a lot of historical information around relationships and how we used to be in a tribe as one big family with many partners, and not even so far away as Stone Age, but even talking about Renaissance and times before and after in ancient Greece and ancient Rome, where relationships were more based on mutual benefit and usually or very often would include other partners as well, because there would be benefits. So bigger family, you can protect your home better. You could rely on someone for mental health support. And it just really makes sense to me to have multiple different partners, because I realized at some point in my life, I realized that friends are kind of like that as well. Every single friend of mine kind of serves different function in my life. I really love them for different things, and I didn't realize how different those things were. Some of them I go to because I need to cry with someone, and somebody I would go to because I can borrow money from them and we have awesome conversations. Others we really passionately argue, but we connect on so many other levels that we love because we stay up all night and we discuss things about space and science, and they're so different. And I've realized that because a few years ago I tried to bring together all those people in one group, and they were just too different to coexist. It was really bizarre experience. It was a bit difficult to have them in that group. As a migrant, I don't have here friends from school. None of those things unite us. It's always individuals who came to my life, and also my personality, how I bring people together. And that reminded me, my personality also allows me, or my other needs as well, it just allows me to connect with different people. And if I have really close friendship, at what point can I say that we now have a relationship? And a lot of the times, again, sex comes into that. This was especially discussed a lot during the lockdowns, because you could visit your partners if you had sexual relationships during the lockdowns, but you couldn't if you were just friends. How do you prove it? Why that defines a relationship? So that's why it just expanded it for me. And people did tell me that, oh, you're thinking about it because you're bisexual. Like, I've actually always said it out loud, even though I wouldn't claim it. So this was sort of a bit of a disclaimer in Russia. You could say, you could look gay, just don't say you're gay. And it always was a safe place to be. I think that's why we've got so many drag queens in Russia, but we just call them singers. That's it. That's how singers, male singers look. But I remember always saying that I just don't understand this whole thing. Why do I need to marry someone? Why can't I live with four of my friends? Maybe I have sexual relationship with two of them. Maybe I don't have with two others. Maybe I have with all of them. Why can't we just all live? It just makes a little bit more sense, because I don't like cooking, but she does. And then he likes cleaning, and then he can fix my car. Fabulous. Let's make a community instead. It just really makes sense. But it also makes sense that it might not work for someone, because I don't know what is happening in their inside their heads, inside their bodies, what their experiences are like. But it just totally makes sense to me. So if bisexuality somehow helped me realize that, Yes, please. Wonderful. If not, well, just a bonus.
Amazing. I think that, yeah, that concept is definitely one that would be quite challenging to a lot of people. And at the end of the day, I think whatever sort of relationship style, sexuality, whatever labels sort of resonate with you, I think that's the most important thing, to be able to have the comfort to claim what it is that resonates for you and feel supported in that. So thank you so much for speaking with me today. It's been such a wonderful conversation. And your book, Bi and Prejudice, I'm going to link this in the show notes. I highly recommend that everybody read this book, especially if you are questioning your sexuality. It's a really beautiful read. Thank you so much for joining us, Anna.
Thank you. It's been really wonderful talking to you. Thanks so much.
My pleasure.
Before you head off to listen to another episode, I want to tell you about my 6-week course called Embodied. I have had so many people asking me to teach more online because you're all missing out on my in-person workshops. So I've got you. Embodied is an online experience which will help you to drop into your most sensual self. Through video lessons, curated exercises, workbooks, and guided meditations, along with weekly live group coaching sessions with me, we'll explore how to truly feel embodied from the inside out. Each week, we'll dive into a new topic to help you connect deeper with yourself, your pleasure, and your loved ones. We'll explore themes such as self-inquiry and deconditioning, the energetics of feminine and masculine polarity, menstrual cycle awareness, self-intimacy and self-pleasure, sex and orgasm, of course, and relationships and communication. This course is an intensive exploration in my favorite topics to teach and to help you unlock your inner sensualista. Waitlist students will receive bonus content plus priority enrollment. To get yourself on the waitlist, head to thesensualityacademy.com/embodied-waitlist or simply find the link in the episode description and show notes. I cannot wait for you to join me. Let's get embodied.